Welcome and good morning, everyone. I'm Barbara Chatterton, Chair of the Hospitality Committee of Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, in case you don't know where you are right now. I'm a longtime member. We gather today, our hearts alive with hope that here we will be truly seen, that here we will be welcomed into the garden of this community, where the simple and the elegant, the fluted and the frilled, the bold and the delicate, the shy and dramatic complement one another and are treasured. May we know that here each contributes in their way to the beauty of the whole. All are welcome. All ages, abilities, genders, sexualities, progressive or conservative, short or tall. May we root ourselves in the values of this community, compassion, courage, transcendence, and justice. Prairie programming, like our namesake, is a mixture. Dare I say wildflowers? I don't know. We have presentations by friends, as we do today, or members of the congregation, or an outside speaker speaking on a wide variety of topics. The opening words this morning are from Winston Churchill. Democracy is the worst form of government, except for all those other forms that have been tried from time to time. And the chalice lighting this morning is brought to you by Kate Liu and Kathy Gann.
May this flame, symbol of transformation since time began, fire our curiosity, strengthen our wills, and sustain our courage as we seek what is good within and around us.
And this morning, we're happy to welcome Ken Haydock here for our presentation. Ken is a retired attorney and a longtime friend of Prairie. And here you go. And again, as you can listen, you can have more follow-up at the humanist meeting after the church service.
My first thoughts are, I wonder how much Eugene V. Debs would have enjoyed the story for all ages this morning. And I'm a little worried about whether exposure to all these cats is going to trigger an allergy I had as a child, but we'll hope. Democracy. We like democracy. It's a concept that arose in ancient Greece. They even named it. We owe a great deal to ancient Greece, Western civilization does. And probably the things we like most about democracy is that it incorporates notions of equality, one person, one vote, equity, fair and free elections, and using the principle of going with what the majority would prefer tends to avoid fistfights and civil wars. We like democracy. The concept of democracy was imported into the governance of the emerging Protestant sects in the 17th century. In that context, you'd call it Congregationalism. And it was adopted, small c, and it was adopted by the capital C Congregationalists and the capital F Friends and Baptists and Unitarians and so on over time. Now in the 18th century, democracy was first introduced into the government of a nation in the year 1755. Regrettably, that's pretty much everything I know about the government of Corsica. So probably more important was the fact that in the final quarter of the 18th century, principles of democracy were incorporated into the Constitution of the United States of America. To a degree. Now, there's probably no aspect of our national government that's more small-d democratic than the way we choose our representatives in the House of Representatives. But even there, democracy doesn't work perfectly. Because our congressional districts are based on the total population, not the total number of citizens or the total number of eligible voters, the demographics can vary. And if you imagine a couple of congressional districts that are pretty equal in population, and don't worry about gerrymandering and voter fraud and voter suppression. These are clean districts. These are utopian districts. If in one district there is an unusually high proportion of residents who aren't citizens, folks with green cards, recent immigrants, documented or not, and if there's a high proportion of folks who are citizens who are ineligible to vote, underage, incarcerated felons, that sort of thing, and if among the people who are eligible to vote, not that many bother to register and not that many turn out, this leaves the decision as to who gets to be the member of Congress in that district in the hands of a relatively small number of people, as opposed to a district where there are few people who are ineligible for whatever reason, and they register and turn out to vote in large numbers. But that's probably unavoidable. But it still is an attempt to be fair, equitable, reflect equality, and go with the majority opinion. The Senate is undemocratic. One way you could look at the Senate is to say that senators don't represent people. They represent pieces of geography. Doesn't matter how large the piece of geography is, Texas, Alaska, or how small, Delaware, Rhode Island. It doesn't matter how many people live on that piece of land. Consider this. The population of Wyoming is slightly in excess of 500,000 people. If Wyoming were a city, World Almanac, it would be the 32nd largest city in America. You know what the 31st largest city is? Anyone? No, Milwaukee, slightly larger. So when the folks in Wyoming, Wyomingites, I looked it up, I didn't know. When Wyomingites vote for those who are eligible to vote for a senator, it's the folks who are eligible to vote among about 500,000 people. And that's who gets to decide. When a Milwaukeean votes for a senator, it's not just the other eligible voters in Milwaukee who get to decide. It's the eligible voters among the other 5.3 million residents of Wisconsin. This isn't exactly egalitarian. Another way to consider it is that there are about 5.5 million people who live in the seven states with the smallest populations. Alaska, Montana, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, Delaware, and Vermont. Let's call them group one. Let's call group two the folks who live in California and New York, and there are about roughly 60 million of them. And group three, about 5 million people living on American soil, live in the District of Columbia, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, American Samoa, and Guam. Group one are represented in the Senate, because there are seven states, by 14 senators. Group two, with about 11 times as many people, are represented in the Senate by just four senators. And no one in the District of Columbia, the two Commonwealths, and the three territories is represented in the Senate, and never has been. This is not small d democratic. Now, because of how electoral votes in the Electoral College, the mechanism by which we select presidents and vice presidents, imports this lack of democracy in the Senate into how electoral votes are assigned. Each piece of geography called a state is entitled to a number of electoral votes equal to the number of senators, always two, and the number of members of the House of Representatives that it's entitled to. You wind up with a situation in which it is possible for someone or a vice presidential and vice presidential candidates who don't win more votes than any others in a national election to wind up president and vice president of the United States. This happened three times in the 19th century. It happened in the final year of the 20th century, which was 2000, not 1999. And it occurred less than 2.5 years ago. Well, some people are perfectly happy with this. They believe that we should always stick with the original intent of the founding fathers and the original intent of the framers of the Constitution. I don't exactly see why. If you consider what they wrote into the Constitution and what some of their original intent was, when you look how the Constitution worked with the state laws of the day, they said, you're a slave, you don't get to vote. You're a woman, you don't get to vote. You're a guy, how much property you have? Maybe you'll get to vote, maybe you won't. And oh, incidentally, slavery and the slave trade that supports it, don't touch it until the year 1808. That's written right into the Constitution. I'll get into this more when we get to the humanist union discussion. Most of us, I think, are kind of upset with the possibility of a minority candidate winding up in the presidency or vice presidency. Well, what can you do about that? Well, I've got four concepts I'd like to share. One, which you hear a certain amount about, is let's amend the Constitution. Okay, how do you do that? Constitution affords two different ways of doing that. The way it's always been done has been done 18 times. Well, there are 27 amendments, but the first 10 were kind of a package deal, so 18 times. And you write some language, you get two-thirds of the House to agree to it, two-thirds of the Senate, three-quarters of the state legislatures, you get yourself a constitutional amendment. Problem, when you're dealing with something that's really controversial, which people care about, you're gonna demonstrate on the streets over, you need to reach consensus, and in order to pass an amendment, you need the political equivalent of a planetary alignment. It takes time. Do you really think that it took from 1919 until 1933 for people to notice that prohibition had some untoward, unintended consequences? That's how long it took, however, to get a constitutional amendment and reverse the amendment that established prohibition. So it's not an avenue that is easy to follow. And as I say, there are people who don't want to amend the Constitution. Not even the other way that's built into the Constitution. If two-thirds of the states petition Congress, Congress has to declare a constitutional convention. Wouldn't that be neat? Here's the problem. There are a number of unanswered questions with respect to a second constitutional convention. One, when would it start? Two, when would it end? Three, where would it meet? Four, who would be eligible to be a delegate? Five, what rules of procedure would they follow? And sixth, and most troubling to a lot of people, is the question, what happens if the delegates to the convention say, hey, well, we're here anyway, and they open up the entire Constitution to possible change? Folks on the right wing are afraid of this. Women's rights might be put into the Constitution. labor rights to organize might be written out there in so many words, and the Second Amendment might be repealed. On the left, people say, ooh, labor rights might be banned. Citizens United might be enshrined. Possibly, the right of the people peaceably to assemble might be taken out of the language of the Constitution, and that's not all that crazy. You're sitting in a state in which the last governor, with no objection from either house of the state legislature, actually attempted in a meaningful way to restrict the right of the people to peaceably assemble, if you recall. So no rational political scientist, historian, politician, pundit views the possibility of a constitutional convention with anything but horror. And I encourage you to view it the same way. What other approaches might there be? Well, to reflect on something that might be more fun than horrible, let me suggest something that isn't under discussion. It's not on the table. Nobody's talking about it except me. And it's not going to happen. What if we ceased to have the structure of government we have and we became a parliamentary democracy? There are certain features of that. Because the head of government is always of the same political party as the majority or the majority coalition in the parliament, you can't have divided government. This minimizes the opportunity for deadlock, and it minimizes the opportunity for government shutdown, and wouldn't that be nice? Another feature, it's not necessarily a legal feature, but it's found universally across these parliamentary democracies, is that the head of government, being a member of the legislature, is expected on a regular basis to appear on the floor of the legislature and field questions about politics and policy. Prime Minister of Great Britain is expected to do that for the better part of an hour every week that the House of Commons is in session. Well, it means, for starters, that the head of government can't simply rarely call a press conference and only appear in public before hand-picked ardent admirers in large crowds. It also means that no rational party would choose as its leader, who either becomes the head of government or a candidate for head of government shortly, someone who is inarticulate. They're not going to select somebody in the early stages of Alzheimer's, or somebody who fried his or her brains on drugs and alcohol back in college and is barely articulate, or somebody whose thought process is totally unrelated to facts and logic. I won't name names, but I would suggest that we kind of had to deal with these things over the past 40 years. Wouldn't it be nice not to have to? Finally, if you think about it, domestic political crises, international disputes up to and including wars, and major natural disasters don't tend to occur on a neat, predictable, quadrennial schedule. In a parliamentary system, if you haven't had an election in a long time, then you do have a new election. In Britain, it's after 5 years. But if the majority party decides it wants a new leader, it just changes it, and that's the new head of government. And you can have an election caused, basically, by the legislature. And you don't have to wait a year, 2 years, 3 years before you can do something about changing either the leader or the policies. Come on, wouldn't that be nice? It's not under consideration. What is under consideration, and has been since the 1960s is a way to not amend the Constitution and change the Electoral College, but leave it intact and do a little workaround to assure that whoever the Electoral College designates is whoever won the popular vote without respect to state lines. And what the agreement that does this is called is the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Trips right off the tongue. The compact says once the states that have joined the compact collectively control a majority of the votes in the Electoral College, we won't vote in the Electoral College in the next election for whoever happened to get a majority in our state, or the largest vote, it's not a majority, the largest vote in our state, but rather who got the most votes without regard to state lines, the national popular vote. Neat. Have any states joined it? Why, yes, they have. Which ones? Well, state of Washington, California, Hawaii, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Vermont, and as a 12th party, the District of Columbia, which is treated as if it were a state under the Electoral College. Great. How many electoral votes is that? Well, that would be 172 electoral votes. How good is that? Well, it's the functional equivalent of having a bridge that only goes about 60% of the way across a river. Limited value. Well, wait a minute. Isn't Colorado joining in? Yep. Colorado recently voted to join the compact, and its governor has announced that he will sign that, and that gives us another 9 electoral votes. Well, wait a minute, I'm reading that there are lots of states out there in which the matter is under consideration. Well, that's true, but the lower House of Representatives of New Mexico has voted in favor of it. The Senate of the state of Delaware has voted in favor of it. Pretty decent possibility that those states will join in for another, I believe it's 8 electoral votes. But isn't there a lot, isn't it being considered in a lot of states? Well, the key word is considered. For the press to report that a state is considering it takes one member of the legislature to present the bill in a committee. Now the state is considering it. Here's the problem. Although the League of Women Voters, which supports advancing membership in the interstate compact, will point out, which is true, that in the long term, this isn't a partisan issue. It's not going to help one party over another. And that's not true in the short term. Every state that is a party to the interstate compact is pretty much a capital D Democratic state, a blue state. Well, wait a minute, Colorado? Colorado's been kind of a purple state. Well, it was, but the reason that they're coming on board is that both chambers of their state legislature and their governor right now, capital D Democrats, just saying. So the fact that the matter is also under consideration in Oregon and Minnesota and Maine and New Hampshire may point in the direction of additional states coming on board. I don't hold out too much hope in the immediate term for states like Idaho, Kansas, South Carolina, Georgia, also considering it, and I don't have a clue what's going on in states like Arizona, and Ohio, and Florida, a lot of electoral votes, they joined in. That could actually go from just movement to actual momentum, okay? Hawaii joined early. but Hawaii had to override the veto of its first, and so far only, at that time, Republican governor in order to join the compact. So if you're thinking that the compact will come into effect in time for next year's election, don't put money on it. Do we have a shot of seeing the compact click into effect, achieve critical mass in time for the 2024 election? That is a possibility. So to summarize, we like democracy. U.S. House of Representatives, yay. Senate, yeah. Effect of the Electoral College, not necessarily democratic. Amend the Constitution, long, difficult. Have a constitutional convention to amend the Constitution. I told you not to think about that. That's wrong. Just get that out of your head. Parliamentary system, kind of nice. They have parliamentary systems throughout Europe and in Canada and Japan and Australia and New Zealand, right? Here I will conclude, and I will point out that the discussion of this, questions, answers, and comments, will be at the meeting right here of the Humanist Union of Madison following a potluck. And you don't have to be a humanist, you don't have to belong to a union, and you don't even have to live in Madison to be welcome. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for coming. Enjoy coffee, greet your neighbors, and again, as has been mentioned, you can go to the humanist meeting afterwards and talk to Ken some more. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you.